Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt, get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is the Shame-Free Zone, and I'm your host, Veronica Monet. We're going to take a little bit of a detour tonight. You know, we usually talk about sex or something about something close to the topic. Tonight, we're actually going to be talking about your health. We do that every so often here in the Shame-Free Zone, and I think it's especially important this time of year. Holidays are behind us. A lot of us may not be thrilled with some of the choices that we made. And more importantly, some of those choices have a tendency to kind of linger on, you know, kind of get in that habit of dipping into the candy dish or eating some cookies or maybe having a little cup of hot cocoa before you go to bed. My guest tonight is Aaron Schneider. Now, he's actually done something quite remarkable. He's recovered from his diabetes. If you won't believe this, the guy's had diabetes at the age of 22. That's an incredibly tender age, I think, to be struck with type 2 diabetes. But he's turned it around. He's a personal trainer now. And he's actually going to be sharing with us some of the health benefits of periodic carb loading. So don't tune us out just yet. We're not just going to be telling you to go eat your vegetables here. We're actually going to be talking about some of the ways that you can eat some carbs. Aaron, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be on.
Well, glad to have you here, too. Now, you've got a book out. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's called The New Diabetes Prescription, and basically it outlines, not just for diabetics, but anybody who's looking to really control their weight, ways to do so that's going to keep them free of any medications and in as basically in as pleasant a way possible diet-wise. Like we were talking about carb loading just a moment ago, and it does allow people to pretty much no food is forbidden if you eat it at the right time.
Oh, boy, that's good news for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I know for myself, I tend to go to the zone, you know, Dr. Barry Sears, the zone where
sure.
He's basically just greens and meat. And you know, after a while, you can actually kind of start to feel a little bit malnourished on a diet like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel malnourished on any diet. You know, I mean, that's the word diet. It puts the first three letters in it, D-I-E.
But, very good.
Yeah, thank you very much. Can't take credit for it, but I'll use it. but it goes back to that, you know, any diet that we go on, we're going to start to feel deprived sooner or later. You know, we like the results, but, you know, it can get bland. And of course, keeping on the diet is what's going to keep the pounds away. And so it's this constant dilemma of, you know, what do you do when you're at a party and the foods that you're supposed to be eating are definitely not on the menu? It's nice to have a way where you can have your cake and lose weight too. And so that's what I'm teaching people in the new diabetes prescription using periodic carb loading is basically diabetics follow a low-carb diet. Oh, not just diabetics, but anybody who's trying to lose weight. Follow a low-carbohydrate diet for maybe 5 days. So we're not talking about, you know, an Atkins-level commitment to a low-carbohydrate diet for the rest of your life. We're talking about restricting carbs for a few days, and then you do get a 1 to 2 day window where you can adjust those carbs. You know, you do have to keep it moderate for the most part, but if you want to have beer and pizza, if you want, you know, if you want to make it coincide with Thanksgiving like I did, along with Christmas, you know, just those two Thursdays,
right.
You can do that, you know, and you have that day, you eat that food, you're pretty much not hungry for the next few days, you go back to your low-carbohydrate diet, and the pounds don't come on.
So, okay. Now, So are you basically saying you just have those foods twice a year?
No, I'll have my birthday's is just 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and my anniversary for my wedding is actually, stuck between those. So Thursday is in November are a pretty carb-intensive day, period for me. Yeah. But basically, I will make sure that I follow a low-carbohydrate diet for 4 or 5 days between those days. And, maybe once or twice a month, I'll allow myself to have, pretty substantial amount of carbohydrates. It could be burger and, cheeseburger and fries. It could be, some chocolate cake. I'm very careful to make sure that I'm following a low-carbohydrate diet before and after that. But during those periods, I'm kind of letting loose. And
yeah.
The wonderful thing about it is your body responds hormonally to restricting those carbohydrates and then allowing yourself to eat them in a way that does not lead to that fat gain. And that's the psychological and metabolic advantage that you're really facing with that sort of cyclic carbohydrate diet, as it's come to be known.
So, and then why is it that your body will let you do that if you... I don't quite understand that. Can you explain that
sure.
to our listeners?
Absolutely. Basically, what's going on is when you restrict carbohydrates, your muscle glycogen and your liver glycogen, which is just a fancy term for where carbohydrates are stored in the body, those get depleted. And that makes sense. I mean, if you don't have any carbohydrates going through your system, of course, the stores for your body's carbohydrates are less. That's, the good news. So then what happens when you eat carbohydrates? The first thing that's going to happen is those glycogen stores are then going to get filled back up. It's kind of like a bank that then gets, replenished.
Okay.
So during the time that the carbohydrates are getting replenished there, what's happening is they're not getting stored back up as fat.
The weightlifters do, because I know that weightlifters do periodic carb loading.
Absolutely.
A lot of times in order so that they have more energy for the workout.
And that's the glycogen. Now, the other wonderful thing about this is first of all, low-carbohydrate diets can screw with a hormone called leptin. Now, we all know that low-carbohydrate diets, those can help you lose weight, but leptin is this scary little hormone that gets excreted by your fat cells that basically keeps tabs on when you're trying to diet. It's responsible for giving those cookie cravings. It's the cookie and craving monster. Basically, what's happening is your fat cells are excreting leptin, and when there's fewer fat cells excreting leptin, the signal of leptin to the brain is diminished. When that happens, your brain knows that you're on a diet and that you're cutting out, that you're losing body fat. When that happens, it panics and it increases your cravings, specifically for carbohydrates. And second of all, it slows your metabolism. And this is exactly why after 5 to 10 days on a diet, you start to get cravings, you start to get lower energy, and your weight loss stalls. The beautiful thing about replenishing carbohydrates is it then brings those leptin levels back up. And so what you're able to do is you're able to go through a low-carb period.
Right.
You're getting loss, you then replenish, your leptin levels, you get continued fat loss.
Oh, wow. Okay, so like if I don't eat bread or flour, but if I decided I was going to have maybe a bowl of rice every fifth day, would that fall
sure.
in line with what you're talking about?
Absolutely. So what you do is, you'd go on a low-carbohydrate diet for about 4 or 5 days. Usually the way it's done is you go 5 days of low carb and 1 to 2 days of higher carb. Now, I'm assuming you're not a diabetic, so you can get away with, you can definitely get away with getting in more carbohydrates, more periodically than somebody who's, just starting out on the diet. So, yeah, a bowl of rice, 2 cups of rice, that'd be about 100 grams of carbohydrates. If that's what you want to use, go for it.
Okay, and what if you do have blood sugar problems? Then you want to keep that a smaller portion?
If you do have blood sugar problems, first of all, if it's you have blood sugar problems, which I do, but let's say also you've got 50 pounds you want to lose, 60 pounds you want to lose, maybe 100 pounds you want to lose. I mean, typical type 2 diabetic starting out, this path. What do you do then? In a situation like that, I suggest to my clients to do a carb load twice a month. So you're going to go about 10 days of following a low-carbohydrate diet, and then about twice a month, you then have that exact same carbohydrate load that we're just talking about with you doing it. Difference is, this person then needs to check their blood sugar and make sure that, of course, it's not going into levels that are dangerous for them.
Okay.
You know.
Right. So
that's it.
Need to be cautious. And do you make any distinctions between the type of carbs that are like the difference between a bowl of brown rice and a bag of chips?
That's a great question. Basically, what we're talking about is, do different carbs have a different effect on the body? And the answer is yes, they do. If you wanted to prolong the carb load, if you wanted to basically make the time that it takes for you to replenish those glycogen stores longer so that you can just enjoy this period a little bit longer, then, you're going to stick to the more brown rice. You're going to avoid the high-fructose corn syrup. You're going to avoid the white flour, the enriched flour. You can stick to more fruits and vegetables. And that's a great strategy that a lot of people have. However, if you want this day to coincide with something like Thanksgiving or a large meal that this is something that usually typically I'm going to be gaining weight on, but today if I just strategically place it here, I can have my two pieces of pie but not necessarily, gain 10 pounds from it. Then basically what you do is you just have that one big carbo bomb meal and go right back to the low-carb diet.
Okay. Now, that's a hard thing to do. It's been my experience. Once you've got that carb fix or whatever, making that transition back to like a salad or some steamed greens can be a little difficult. Do you have any tips for people on how to make the transition back in to the low-carb diet?
So, there's a few that you can do. First of all, just from doing the diet long enough, it doesn't get hard anymore.
Okay.
That's the good news. But transitionally wise, it can be a pain in the butt at first, because every time that you're cutting those carbs, you're getting, the first few times you do it, you're getting this lethargic feeling, you're getting fatigued. And so a few supplements can actually help adjust your mood a little better so that time is easier. So one thing that I recommend is people can take something called 5-HTP, and that stands for 5-hydroxytryptophan. That's something that you can purchase in any health food store. And basically what it is the precursor for the neurotransmitter called serotonin. And everybody's heard of serotonin a bit. That's basically the happy neurotransmitter. It's what Prozac makes you, increases in your brain.
Okay.
Among other things, though, when you cut your carbohydrates, serotonin also goes down. And that adds to that cranky, anxious, carb-craving, moody feeling that people can get.
Yeah, I've had a lot of that, actually,
yes.
Aaron.
We all get it.
So cutting carbs makes you cranky because of the reduced serotonin levels.
Serotonin, yes. And so to naturally increase those serotonin levels, you can take 100 to 200 milligrams, and that's a typical tablet's worth, of 5-hydroxytryptophan a few times a day. I'd recommend two or three tops. Talk to your doctor if you're going to be doing more than that. And what you're going to find is that the edge is taken off. And it makes that transition, it just makes kind of just being in a blissful, low-carb state a lot easier to do.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So I suppose, maybe if you're anticipating that, you could do other things like, meditation or, something that's going to be self-soothing if you're anticipating that you're going to feel a little cranky. I've noticed a drop in body temperature. Have you ever noticed that?
Carbohydrates, when you first ingest them, they will increase your body temperature, just right from the get-go. So, when you start to cut carbohydrates, you may notice a little bit of a drop in temperature. I've never found that to be something huge, but I do know that other people, can experience that from time to time. But as long as it's not a thyroid issue, it's nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm not worried about it. It's just it adds to the crankiness.
Oh, I see.
I'll be feeling cranky and cold.
Interesting.
And eventually I got to get used to it, and I, you know, I wear more clothing, but I just noticed that, you know, when you do have some carbs, it does seem to give you a little more body heat.
Oh, absolutely.
So, let's backtrack a little bit. I was so anxious to get to some of your tips. I didn't even give you a chance to tell us about your story. Now, I understand you've dropped 80 pounds of fat, put on 20 pounds of muscle, and you're now a personal fitness trainer. That's quite a transformation.
Yeah, it was a big wake up call the day that I learned that I was a diabetic. You know, it was pretty terrifying to find out that at the age of 22 you weren't type 1 diabetic but type 2 diabetic, which is basically, you know, basically you did this to yourself.
Right, right. Kind of humiliating, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
among other things.
But then I think, you know, people can be gentle with themselves because the American culture is just that way. It's, you know, it's on all the little fast food joints and the advertisements on TV and the aisles, the grocery store. It's all pretty much conspiring to give people diabetes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it pretty much is. I mean, the only difference between a person who gains a lot of weight who winds up diabetic versus not is the genes. You know, this, I mean, basically diabetes is nothing more than a product of the obesity epidemic that's happening in the United States today. And it's going to get worse and worse as more and more of us gain more and more weight. You know, and that's the real thing that we have to go after. It's not, I mean, we don't really have a diabetes problem. We do, but to really get to the source of it, we have to solve the obesity problem. And you solve that, and you'll make diabetes go away.
Well, I noticed I was looking at your website, you know, which is also, by the way, for people who want to, if you're not one of my Facebook friends, I've already posted Aaron Schneider's website to my wall. But if you're not on Facebook with me, then you can go to the new diabetesprescription.com. But when I was perusing your website, I noticed that you talked about how medication that treats diabetes actually causes people to put on weight. Now, is that fat or is that water retention?
That's going to be both. And it depends on the drug. And basically the reason for that comes down to something talking about insulin sensitivity. Now, basically, you know, for, you know, just to give a very quick tutorial about why that is, if I have high blood sugar, what I have to do is I either have to make my cells more sensitive to insulin, which is what's going to shove that blood sugar into the cells. So I just make myself more sensitive to the hormone insulin, or I could also just increase the total amount of insulin that I have. You know, those are the two ways that I can lower blood sugar. I can either increase the total amount of it, of insulin, or I can just make myself more sensitive to it. Well, every time you increase insulin sensitivity, it typically goes with weight loss. Every time you increase the total amount of insulin, it typically goes with weight gain. So you're accomplishing low blood sugar through either way, but one of the ways is going to tend to cause fat gain, while the other one is going to tend to cause fat loss. And so when I make that point that there's a lot of drugs for type 2 diabetes out there that do tend to increase weight gain, those specific drugs are the ones that are increasing total amount of insulin. And what's a pain in the butt about, I mean, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, nobody likes to gain weight, but really, you know, what's the big deal about that? The problem with that is when you are increasing weight gain, you are making it a little bit harder to get off those pills if you wanted to control this disease through weight loss. You know, I mean, if you really want to go about and just completely control this disease, you know, from the blood pressure, the blood cholesterol to the blood sugar, you got to get your weight down, which is one of the reasons that stomach stapling, you know, gastric bypass surgery is one of the big, you know, big new, you know, innovations in type 2 diabetes management.
Yeah.
You know, doctors have gone on to this, I mean, to the point that they're recommending we staple your stomach so that you vomit if you so much as eat, you know, more than a thimbleful of food at a time.
And it occurs to me, you know, what you're sharing here, it so much about the body and the way it responds is actually So, you know, it's chemistry. And if you yep. don't understand that, then you're going to get mixed results or perhaps very predictable results. But I think about all the people who carry around so much shame about the fact that they're not able to control the shape and size of their body. And I think it's so sad because they don't have access to the information. So, you know, of
yeah.
course,
yeah.
you know, the doctors aren't necessarily telling them, hey, take this medication and you'll get fat.
Yeah, I mean, they don't necessarily see it, though. I mean, you know, I mean, I understand their point of view. It's like, okay, I have a patient who comes in and I see on this blood test that they've given that they have these markers for diabetes, and I need to get rid of these markers as quickly as possible, so I'm going to prescribe this medication. It has these side effects, but experiencing those side effects is better than the patient having a heart attack or a stroke or just, you know, losing a limb or going blind.
Right.
But, you know, and I understand that point. And that's, you know, and, you know, on the, you know, to play devil's advocate here, doctors are not used to diabetics coming in and saying, oh, no, you don't understand. I want to do everything possible to really kick this thing in the butt. You know, we're kind of a society where we go in and it's like, oh, okay, I have the cold, or I have a sinus infection, I go to the doctor, I get this pill, I swallow it, I'm better. Well, how is diabetes different? I go there, I get these medications, okay, then it must be under control. It doesn't stop there. Diabetes, of the top six killer diseases in the world, is the most in our hands and is the most influenced by actions that we take on a day-to-day basis, those actions being what we eat, how good we take care of ourselves, whether or not we exercise. And that is what is really going to control diabetes. And it's the fact that we're not doing those things as a society on a day-to-day basis, which is why we're getting fatter and sicker.
Yeah, and of course we are talking about type 2 diabetes. There are people.
We are talking about type 2 diabetes.
Right.
That accounts for 90% of all cases of diabetes.
Oh, and growing. It's just getting worse and worse now. And younger and younger. So I also was reading from your website some of the things that you did that got you to the point where you were type 2 diabetic at age
yeah.
22. And I have to admit, I've done these things too. I mean, not for years, but I remember getting out of the gym and going and getting that frozen yogurt with a whole bunch of M&Ms on it, you know?
It was fun, I'll tell you, but expenses were, at the time, it seemed like the right thing to do.
Right, I know, you know. So you talk about getting two bear claws for a midterm and peanut butter cups on your ice cream for your frozen yogurt right after you worked out.
Memories. Yep.
Yeah.
Vivid memories.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the two bear claws, it was actually on my birthday, my 21st birthday, when I found out I had that midterm. So, of course, I have those two bear claws. I pass out. My friends wake me up to get drunk.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was a bad day.
So you had an insulin reaction on the two bear claws.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you went drinking?
Yeah, several hours later after I woke up.
Which,
you know,
alcohol is just sugar.
Yeah, it was straight beer that they were feeding me. So.
It's a wonder you didn't die.
I know. You know?
Wow. Wow. So did you go the medical route at first? Did you go on the pills or the insulin injections or?
Sure. You find that you're a diabetic. I was prescribed something called metformin, which is a very, it's a very basic beginner type of drug that's given to type 2 diabetes. Fortunately, it does not cause weight gain. I took that, but I really knew that what was really causing, you know, this disease in my body at such an early age was the way that I was eating. You know, I can't even tell you how clear it was to me, and it was just this, God, well, I guess that what I was doing really was messing me up. You know, before I was just fat, you know, but so were a lot of other 22-year-olds. And, okay, so maybe I ate a lot of stuff that made me fat, but so did everybody else. So did a lot of everybody else. But finally, I was different from them. So finally, those behaviors were not okay in my mind. And so then I went about saying, okay, well, I know I have to stop eating this way, but my God, my entire life revolves around food, and I self-medicate myself with food, and now I can't do that anymore. So now what do I do? you know, and that's what really led me to research into how I could basically get off food, you know, in the same way that somebody else would get off a drug. You know, this one was mine.
And that's the other thing, too, about blood sugar problems. It really is a drug in a lot of ways. And once you've gotten on that horrific cycle where your blood is going up, you know, your blood sugar is going up and down, you know, you start to feel like you've got to have the sugar in order to survive.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember, you know, first of all, if we're just talking about low blood sugar, when you experience low blood sugar, you will go nuts for food. And I've had insulin overdoses in my time where I've had an entire ice cream cake. You know, that was no joke. But, you know, beyond that, what's amazing is some of the foods that we eat actually make us want to eat more and more and more. A great example is soda. I like to, you know, whenever I speak on the radio, I make the point of how come you can go to a fast food restaurant and you can have the burger and fries and we can get refills as much as we want these days. So you get a large soda, you drink it, you refill it, you drink it again. You have that burger and fries that's maybe 2,000 to 3,000 calories, and you're hungry 4 hours later. How is that even possible? How is it even possible that you could eat that much in one serving and your body had no shutoff mechanism inside it to say, hey, we've got enough food for the day. We're good. You know, you try and do that with hard-boiled eggs and apples. You know, yeah. A dozen hard-boiled eggs and a dozen apples, you will vomit by six. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, you know, you're actually getting nutrition in that case. But I think with the junk food, your body is like, where's the food? Where's the food? There's nothing I can build any cells with here.
Well, you know, what's interesting is when it comes to the high fructose corn syrup, which is the sugar, the only sugar that's actually in soda, that skips leptin. It doesn't increase those leptin levels. So leptin stays lower, so cravings stay higher.
Hmm.
And when it comes to the bun and the refined flours and the saturated fat that's in the burger and the fries, that increases insulin levels through the roof, which then lowers them later, which then also adds to cravings.
So saturated fats also have an impact on the insulin levels.
Yes. There's specific combinations of food that can cause insulin to go higher. A killer one is enriched flour plus saturated fat. So what is that? Think like a Twinkie. That's a great example. That's got fat in it, that's got the refined flour, and it's also got high fructose corn syrup. You know, that's a fantastic combination, you know, in terms of anything that can ruin your health. So anytime that you're getting that fat sugar combination, blood sugar is going to go up.
Wow. Okay, and then what if you are just doing, like, let's say you decide, okay, I'm going to stay away from the flour, I'm going to stay away from the sugar, but I'm going to have, something fried, like fried zucchini. Let's take a carbohydrate that's got a low glycemic index.
Sure.
Does that also spike the insulin?
Well, sure, but it's good, better, and best. I mean, let's say that it's your carb load period, and you're trying to, you know, you want to treat yourself, but you want to treat yourself with something that you know is not going to add, you know, it is not going to put you on as much of a roller coaster. You know, sometimes it's just good, better, and best.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Sometimes it's just an issue of, well, you know, I'm going to do this, but I want to be somewhat responsible about it. Fried zucchini would be an example. You know, inside the zucchini part is effectively zero carbohydrate. You know, it has maybe 2 grams once you fry it up. And, of course, the batter is what you're really combating. And, yeah, you've got that combination of saturated fat plus flour in it. But if you're getting maybe only 300 calories worth of that instead of 1,000 calories in the burger and fries, I would consider that a victory.
Hmm. Okay.
You know? So sometimes it's about choosing your battles.
Right. Now, have you studied any about how this also affects women's hormones?
Estrogen levels, sure.
Yeah.
You know, estrogen, progesterone. Yeah, I mean, any time that you're increasing insulin levels through the roof, you're going to then take estrogen levels, and those are going to go out of whack. So, yeah, hormonally, you know, this can be more of a detriment to a woman. Actually, it also affects men in the same way, that they can have problems with, a lot of diabetics have problems with erectile dysfunction.
Right.
Testosterone levels can go lower.
So if your insulin gets spiked, are you more likely to become estrogen dominant?
You can.
Okay.
You know, in fact, what they're finding is, you know, you've heard of the man boobs. You know, boobs.
Oh, heard about them. I've seen them.
Yeah.
Haven't we all?
That actually comes from men having too much estrogen in their bodies. And that predominantly comes from eating things like potato chips. You know, any sort of, you know, a lot of those foods that have combinations of refined flour and saturated fat. So we come back to that. You know, so the bottom line is these foods that affect blood sugar for both sexes, you know, it affects you hormonally in a detrimental way.
Huh. But it's almost everything people eat.
I know.
So give us an idea of what when you're doing your low carb diet, what does that look like? You know, just I know a lot of people are so afraid to change what they
eat. Oh, I understand. I understand. You know, and you know, I'll tell you right now, I'll run through the whole diet, but before I do, let me just make the point of no matter what diet you go on, the hardest part of it will always be finding menus that taste delicious to you so that you would actually favor these new foods over your old favorites, which were not as healthy for you. You know, and it's always going to come down to that. You are always going to have to do the footwork and try and come up with those recipes, which is why I included in my book, you know, I can't remember how many pages of just recipes, low-carb and high-carb for people. But what does a typical day for me look like? I'll start the day with an omelet. I'll have a three-egg omelet every morning. And that why? Because that tastes good to me. You know, that's something that I would have any time. You know, if it's the weekend and I have a little bit more time, I'll have bacon with it. I don't do that every day, but, you know, I'll do it on the weekends. For a mid-morning snack, I may have some, you know, some Greek yogurt with some nuts, or I may have some nuts with some cheese. For basically, about 2 hours later, not quite lunchtime because I get up pretty early, I'll have a protein smoothie. I'll use frozen strawberries, stevia as a sweetener. I can use some non-alcoholic vanilla, strawberry protein powder, and flax seeds. That tastes very good to me. Mm-hmm. I'll have a salad for lunch. I'll have another protein smoothie a little bit later in the day just because it's very quick. It's a very easy meal for me to make. I'll have something like broccoli and pot roast or something like that for dinner, sometimes salmon, and I call that a day. You know, so it's a very pleasant diet. I have stable energy the entire day. My body weight stays consistent that way, and my cravings stay low because I'm getting the taste of sweet from my protein smoothies, which is actually helping me to not crave carbohydrates.
Yes, exactly. So now, what about some of the dangers of, because there's a lot of protein in what you just talked about, and I don't have diabetes, but I come from a family that does have it genetically, a predisposition in that direction. Mm-hmm. So we're very careful about our sugar, and, you know, have had to be that way all my life.
Sure.
So I worry about the protein-intensive diet because it's supposed to be a little more difficult for the kidneys to process you, and apparently it can induce something called ketosis. Can you speak to that a little
bit? Yes. Let's talk about two things. We'll talk about, is protein bad for the kidneys? When you're a diabetic and you have kidney disease already, a lower protein diet can be good for you.
Okay.
However, if you do not, however, high protein diets do not cause kidney disease.
Oh, they don't.
If you are a diabetic, you do not have to worry about a high protein diet causing kidney disease. My own endocrinologist, who is a type 1 diabetic himself, who has kidney disease, does not see anything wrong with me following the diet that I'm following.
No,
I know another. I know another diabetic who's also a doctor. He's a type 1 diabetic. Well, he got it from cystic fibrosis, which is basically a type 1 diabetic. Also follows, has about the same amount of protein in his diet as I have in mine.
Hmm.
Now,
wow.
If you have kidney disease, then all of that extra protein can be, you know, a problem on the kidneys, and so a lower protein way to go, you know, maybe a little bit more carbohydrate, a little bit more fat, you know, it can be something, it can be the way for you. And so that's something to talk to your doctor about.
Okay.
But in terms of just saying, okay, you know, I'm going to eat protein that's going to damage my kidneys, it's just not there.
Hmm. Well, you know what? I find that very comforting. Thank you. Because it's something, you know, that I've been concerned about. For our listeners, you know, I mentioned a term that they may not be familiar with. Can you explain to them a little bit about ketosis and what that is?
Yes. There's two terms that we're going to talk about. The first one is benign dietary ketosis, and the other one is ketoacidosis. So when you have that word acidosis, plus the keto, that's the bad one. Now, just dietary ketosis, that's where you go on a low-carbohydrate diet and your body starts to produce ketones. And they have these little strips that we diabetics take where we test for ketones in the urine, and it's usually something that the type 1 diabetics do. But the problem with that is sometimes if you find ketones in the urine, it can mean that you're going through ketoacidosis. Now, that's the problem. Ketoacidosis is where your blood sugar goes extremely high, 400 milligrams per deciliter, 500-600 milligrams per deciliter higher. And you have massive dehydration, plus you're building up toxic levels of ketones in the body, and if you do not get your blood sugar down and your insulin up, you're going to die. You're going to die pretty quick. That is, again, ketoacidosis. That does not come from just finding ketones in the urine because you had a low-carbohydrate diet. And how do you know? If you are a diabetic and you test for ketones and you know you're on a low-carbohydrate diet, but your blood sugar is 80, your glucometer is working, your blood sugar really is just 80 or 90, not 490,
right?
That's just ketones in the urine from following a low-carbohydrate diet. That is not diabetic ketoacidosis. You find those ketones in the urine and you're really thirsty and your blood sugar is 480, you're in trouble and you need to, you know, to get those insulin up and the blood sugar down. So that's the difference. I mean, they throw that word around, but there's really two different things going on here.
Wow, I did not know that either. Now, it will happen, though, if you're having a high-protein diet, that you're going to urinate more because the more water is required to digest protein.
There's
so sometimes you will kind of get
a diuretic effect.
Yeah,
you'll
kind of get a sense of being thirsty, too.
You can get a sense of being thirsty. That's one of the good things about a low-carbohydrate diet for a diabetic, because since you do have this diuretic effect, you have a blood pressure-lowering effect.
Mm.
And usually what comes with type 2 diabetes is higher blood pressure, so that's actually one of the benefits. So, yeah, what's the solution there? Drink more water.
Wow. My God. So now you're a trainer. You're not a nutritionist, right?
No, I'm not. I am not a registered dietitian.
And you're not a doctor.
Not a doctor.
But you know more than my doctor. So how is that?
Well, thank you for that. I can promise you, there's a lot of stuff I don't know. But thank you for that. Well, basically, I got a degree in math from Berkeley. I'm the kind of guy who's very comfortable with technical terms and with studying and understanding systems. And of course, the body is a system. And I read a lot and I had a passion for it. And literally, my life was on the line one way or another. And so when you throw in all those factors, you know, and you spend enough time studying this stuff, you're going to come to just have an understanding of your particular niche.
Right, but because it affects you.
Yeah,
it affects you.
Because it affects you, and I wanted to learn this stuff, and I wanted to help other people understand it.
Well, Aaron, I have to tell you, you're not the first person I've interviewed on this program about a diabetes diet, but you're the first author I've interviewed who was so informed and able to explain it in user-friendly terms. You know, so that.
Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, no, I think it's excellent. I haven't read your book yet, but I'm sold. I thought we were gonna I'll probably talk a little bit more about how, people could, have a cupcake or something without feeling guilty. And you have covered that, but I'm personally fascinated with these kind of details. And I think it's real important. And, for the listeners out there, if some of this seems not quite so interesting, I think it's important that we understand how our bodies work, because a lot of times our doctors don't. They don't even read the inserts for the medications that they prescribe. I know I had a doctor who prescribed me with birth control pills to try to control my hormones when I was having perimenopause, in my 30s. And
oh, wow.
Then I went to see an eye doctor, and my vision had changed, and he had to alter my prescription. And he goes, "Did you recently get a new, prescription of birth control pills?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "Well, those alter your vision." I said, "Well, nobody ever told me that." And then I went back, and I read the insert, and sure enough, that's exactly what it said. So then I went back to my prescribing gynecologist, and she says, "Oh, that's ridiculous. They have no effect on your vision." And I said, "Do you even read the inserts for the stuff you prescribe?"
Yes. Yeah. I had a very good friend of mine who had lost about 40 pounds on a low-carbohydrate diet, and what she did not know at the time was that she was a diabetic and she still had high blood pressure. She probably had about 100 pounds to lose total. She'd lost the first 40 of it. Her blood pressure was still high. She goes to a newly minted doctor, and the doctor says, "Well, I am going to prescribe you a beta blocker, and you're going to have to change the way that you've been losing weight." And that was as far as she went. She subsequently put on about 25 of the pounds back in fat and water, and couldn't for the life of her figure out how to get it off. I mean, it didn't have to be that drug.
Wow.
It didn't have to be a beta blocker at first. But they don't. Sometimes the synthesis of all the factors that you're doing to positively influence your health in your own life, plus that medication, are not taken into account. And so that's one of the reasons I also wrote this book, is because I want to make people aware of what options they have to manipulate their own body without those medications. And so if you need to take them, you'll be taking as few as possible, as low a dosage as possible, and probably in a way that it won't be getting in the way of what you're trying to do for yourself. It's just about making people aware of how much power they really have over their circumstances.
Right, and then when you go to talk to your healthcare professional, use them more as an information source rather than some type of a dictator who tells you exactly how to do things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It changes the relationship with the doctor.
It totally does. So tell us a little bit about how 80 pounds of fat came off of your body. Did you actually cut down on calories, or did you just change the type of foods that you were eating? Or was it something about the exercise program you put yourself on?
Oh, sure, I'll answer all of that. It's a combination of the three, but I'll break down exactly how those play off of each other. So in my situation, I was 22 years old. I had about 80 pounds to lose, and I was an emotional eater. And so what that meant was whenever I had a problem, I was trying to reach for food, but I couldn't do that with the old foods that I was doing it with anymore. I couldn't go for the cookies, chips, candies, and colas. It wasn't going to be like that. So I had done some reading. Atkins was popular at this time, so I knew that was a viable option for me. People were dropping weight like flies. Great. So I tried that, and of course I would get cravings after a few days and binge and screw it up.
Okay.
And then I would go back. So it's this roller coaster effect where I'm losing some weight, but then I'm gaining a little bit back. And then I'm losing some weight, and then I'm gaining a little back. And of course there's all the guilt that's coming in with this. And so I basically had some issues of not even being able to really follow that diet to a T yet because of psychologically what was still going on inside of me. So what that forced me to do was to really learn how to not do that anymore. You know, this is where the addictive side of my personality getting in the way of my health came into play. And so I dealt with those issues by actually kind of just, you know, some of it was just dealing with, you know, taking supplements like 5-HTP. Some of it was just saying, I don't want to do this to myself anymore, and just having enough fed up moments that those binges became fewer and far between. And several years later, maybe about 5 years and about 20 more pounds to lose, I finally discovered the cyclic carbohydrate diets. And I was able to, at that time, finally actually follow them, not use that low carbohydrate, then carb load experience as just an excuse to binge and binge and binge. Because when you think about it, I mean, that's not really going to work. You know, just going low carb for 5 days and then going on a 10,000 calorie binge is not what we've been talking about. We're talking about allowing yourself an indulgence, but not just going hog wild and blowing it.
Hmm.
You know, and
that's
so...
That's an important distinction, Aaron.
Very important distinction. We are not talking about, oh yeah, you know, you just have some hard-boiled eggs for 5 days and then, you know, go to the bagel shop for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and have donuts in between. It, you know, calories still count.
Mm.
Calories right. still count. But, you know, but the problem is when you're eating the wrong food, it actually slows your metabolism so that 200 calories of the wrong food is like eating 400 calories. You know, because your metabolism is slower, you're gonna basically store more of that as fat. So, you know, basically that's what happened is I was following, you know, as good as I could at the time, a low carbohydrate diet. I was screwing it up because I was still binge eating. I went through the process to finally wean myself off that roller coaster of a food addiction, and that took care of about, you know, maybe the first 60 pounds. The rest of which I was able to successfully navigate through following a lower carbohydrate diet and then allowing myself those sips of those foods that I was missing on the weekends without overdoing it. And that was the real trick.
Wow. Yeah. So, and what about alcohol? You talked about getting drunk the day you almost, well, that you had passed out from insulin. Insulin shock? Is that what we call that when you pass out from insulin overload?
I mean, when your blood sugar goes, basically, you know, you could call it insulin shock because what's happening is you ate a bunch of sugar, your insulin levels went very high, so your blood sugar went very low, and so you experience a hypoglycemic or insulin shock.
Hmm. Okay.
But fortunately, I was never a big alcohol drink, you know. I was never, you know, big on the alcohol. I have a, you know, my brother is an alcoholic, and he has, you know, gone through his steps, and he's trying to break himself of that. But that was something but he was several years older than me. And this, by the way, this goes back to, you know, addiction being in the family. You know, here I was thinking that he was the only addict, and, you know, I was being hypocritical all the time.
a lot of times addiction is about serotonin levels. So, whether you're an alcoholic or you're a food addict, a lot of times you are kind of self-medicating serotonin up, you know, imbalance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But, you know, I basically saw what he was doing to himself with the alcohol, and I pretty much just wanted to stay away from that. I just didn't want to follow down those footsteps. So, you know, I chose binge eating as an alternative. It didn't work out too well, but I'm happy to say I'm over that.
Would you say you're addicted to working out now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's one of my mood enhancers. It does go back to that, you know, you're always going to have that kind of personality that is seeking, you know, is seeking a high of one way or another, and I'm, you know, that's the idea, is like, hey, if you have this tendency, what do you got to do? You got to direct it in ways that, you know, it's going to benefit you as opposed to be a detriment.
Absolutely. If I'm going to be addicted to something, I would rather it was jogging or lifting weights than drinking or eating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, down to you.
We've got a couple more minutes here. Tell us a little bit about your book, and also you're a fitness trainer. Where are you located? Can people seek you out?
Oh yeah, I am located in San Diego, California, and I do personal training sessions. I can also do online coaching, which, you know, works pretty well, actually, helping, you know, people all over the country however they want, not just with exercise, but also with their food and, you know, recommending, you know, how to get over specific roadblocks that are affecting them in their life, designing different diets. I also do speaking. People can reach me through my website, which is www.thenewdiabetesprescription.com, and they can get to me through my email, aaron@thenewdiabetesprescription.com. The book is available in major bookstores and on Amazon, and fortunately in about 6 more weeks in Kindle.
Huh,
if anybody
awesome.
Wants to wait for that, yeah.
Got to be on Kindle.
Oh, yeah. Nook and all of it.
Yes, I'm on Kindle, too.
Oh.
Well, Aaron, I certainly hope the listeners got a lot out of this. I know I did. I was taking notes.
Right.
And I was particularly interested in the glycogen levels and the leptin hormones. So you made my day. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome on that.
And best of luck to you. And everybody, you need to go over to the diabetesprescription.com. And you know, you're a great-looking guy.
Thank you very much.
Yep. So you walk your talk, and you're a good advertisement for what you're selling.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron. Best to you in the new year. I hope you sell a million books. And
well,
that's
too.
It
Thanks.
For the Shame-Free Zone, guys. I am going to be here again next Monday. I will be interviewing Pat Davis, as a matter of fact, and hope that you'll tune in then. I also want to let you know that I'm going to be doing a tour. So if you happen to be in the Bay Area, it's anywhere from Santa Rosa to San Francisco to Santa Cruz, I may be in your neighborhood sometime towards the end of January, beginning of February. And as you know, I do house calls. That's as a couples consultant, oftentimes working with couples together. But if you want to have an appointment separately, I also can work with you as an individual. So you can text me once I'm on the road. So I wouldn't do that until probably about the 30th of January. And that number is 415-407-2932. That's 415-407-2932. Or you can schedule something in advance. I recommend that highly. That email is veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. That's it from the Shame-Free Zone tonight. I'll see you next Monday. Thanks so much. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?